you amazing people out there, and welcome to the Amazing Action Comics podcast, where we are all about independent comics. I am one of your hosts, Angel, with Phil Pepe.
How's it going, Angel?
Woo! It's another Thursday, day after Wednesday, which is always good because it was New Comic Book Day. But fuck, freaking for like, you know, I don't know how many weeks we had sort of like a dry spell. And then we get it to the last couple of weeks. Holy shit.
There were, especially this week, there were a lot of number ones. It was actually very hard kind of choosing.
Just digging into my fucking rent money. and freaking, what is it? Bad Idea. 789. Orc Island is a 4-issue mini, right?
I think so. And it's weekly, apparently.
It's weekly. It's weekly.
And they didn't tell anybody that going in, I think, right?
No. So there goes fucking $8 a week. I couldn't even have a freaking McRib. Well, you know what? I'm not going to lie. I had a McRib the other day. It was delicious. Did it again. I'm trying to get as many in before they're out of commission. All right, cool. Guys, this is episode 87 of the Indie Comic Review. For those of you that are brand new, this is where Phil and I take books off the shelf that are number one from small and indie publishers. We read through them and then we give out 2 cents. These are going to be books for the week of 11/9/22. But before we go into our reviews, we just have a couple bits of news. Some of it really sad and then some of it just probably just, yeah, even sadder. So yeah, off you go, Phil. What's our first bit of news?
Well, yeah, another rough week for artists in the comic community, and really just capping off a really rough year. But we lost two really great ones this week: Carlos Pacheco at 60, and Kevin O'Neill, 69. Carlos Pacheco, about a month or so ago, had announced that he did have ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody thought he was going to succumb to it this quickly. But that just shows the devastating effect that this disease has, that it could just rip right through you at a very short amount of time. And of course, he's known for his recent works, revisiting the 20-year-old Aerosmith property with Kurt Busiek. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Kurt Busiek and him have collaborated on Avengers stuff and Superman stuff. And, you know, Carlos Pacheco was such a great, clean line artist, really great with dynamics and superheroes and storytelling, and just an all-around fantastic artist. Definitely from that George Perez school. I think George Perez was a very major influence on him. So that was a really tough loss. Fantastic artist, very young. You know, I think 60 is young, and as I get closer to 60, it's young. Just a bummer, and just a rough way to go, to, you know, be an artist, to lose your mobility and then succumb is just very sad. And then Kevin O'Neill, who I think a lot of people really know him from his work with Alan Moore on League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, also worked on 2000 AD and did a great sort of Judge Dredd parody a bunch of years ago called Martial Law, which I encourage everybody to read. Really dense artist, I like to say. He, he crammed so much information into his work, and he used a lot of lines, but never wasted a line, you know, and was just really one of those, you know, great artists that could really tell any story, but had a really wacky sensibility as well. So another one that will be greatly missed. And if you're unfamiliar with either of their work, check them out, especially the first two volumes of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Those are just some fantastic comics. And again, of course, that Martial Law parody is like one of my favorite things ever done in comics. Just really quick, I do want to just make a brief note. I do have to apologize to actress Joey Lauren Adams for confusing her with Renee Zellweger last week.
Oh, my gosh.
The Kevin Smith book. We've talked about this before. I always confuse F. Murray Abraham with Ben Kingsley, short British actors with big noses, right? And same thing, Joey Lauren Adams, Renee Zellweger, blonde actresses, heavy in the 90s, who both sound like Eric Cartman. So, you know, I do apologize for making that mistake. But yeah,
for the 957 people that wrote in, There goes your attraction.
Wow, that, dude, that's awesome.
Yeah.
900 and something. That's amazing.
Those were like, all the Renee Zellweger fans. They were pissed off.
I think it's less than nine.
Yeah. you know what? I hope it doesn't get to a point where we're doing like, you know, one a week. Announcing, just dropping left to right. But it seems like, you know, it's going to be happening quite soon. Unfortunately, I mean, we're just getting to that turning point in our lives where a lot of these guys that we grew up with, you know, just, yeah, the lights go out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, not cool, but yeah,
I guess.
Moving on. Okay. So just two more bits of news that I probably would have thrown on at the end, but we'll just do it here before we get out the way. 9 PM this Sunday, I'll be premiering or debuting on Whatnot. So I'll be doing a live session with some art that will be, you know, auctioning off and stuff like that. So for those of you that are not familiar with Whatnot, it's pretty much an auction or, you know, buy it now site, mostly for comics and comic art right now. I mean, I saw Legos on there as well. I'm pretty sure it's going to be branching out to almost everything on there. What was really unique about this, so like, you know, if you do eBay and stuff like that, you pretty much just have to sign up an account and then you start listing your products. You just follow the generic rules that they have. And if you abide by them, then you're all good. What Whatnot did a little bit different was you go through the whole process of, you know, downloading the app, creating an account, and then you can go ahead and, you know, just start buying stuff from there. However, if you want to sell anything, you actually have to attend like a workshop. And there isn't any participation. It's just one guy who's lecturing and kind of going over all the features of Whatnot, what you can and cannot do, which was really cool. But then they opened it up to questions. And, you know, when I went through that session, there must have been at least 67 people on it, which was insane. And then they're just asking all these questions that are at the end. Some are relevant and some of them are, you know, they just they might be relevant to what you're doing. But it was pretty cool to have sort of like that level of responsibility or that level of interaction with the people that are going to come on board to your app to be able to represent and do stuff right. So
that's cool.
Yeah. So 9 o'clock. So I'm jumping into that pool of, you know, just, you know, that's the time that I start to draw anyway. So I'll start doing a lot of my warm-ups live and then auctioning those pieces off and then going right into work from there.
See, that's really cool that people get to watch the process. I think that's awesome. Yeah.
And I've been wanting to do it for a while, but, you know, and just finding the platform to be able to do it on. So we'll see. I mean, I'll probably have, you know, a half a person watching me live, and then we'll see if it builds from there. But, you know, I've already put a poll on there. So for people that want to have requests for certain things, there's a poll already on there. And what I'm really looking forward to is sort of like maybe having some interaction with people as I draw.
Cool.
I don't know how distracting that will be, but to be able to have like this chatter back and forth would be kind of cool. And maybe it'll keep me up along with the cup of coffee that I hope to have by my side. Check it out. Yep.
If you get to interact with Angel, don't harass the artist. Why'd you do that line there? What are you doing? What's going on? Erase that.
3 seconds later, it'd just be a blank screen. So Whatnot.
Heckler. Artist hecklers, right?
Yeah, artist hecklers. 9 o'clock this Sunday. I'm going to be auctioning off a Miles Morales blank sketch that I did. And it's going to be accompanied with the Venom drawing that I'm going to be doing live that day. So yeah, and then I think we're doing a. I keep saying we, and it's just me. Is that like? Am I using that pronoun incorrectly?
You're talking about your community.
Yes,
the people that will be engaging with you, or the editorial, the royal way.
That correct. So yes, so we're also going to be giving away a Project Shadow Breed number one sketch cover that I did. So it's pretty cool. I think it's inspired by Wolverine. Can't remember. But yeah, come check it out. That one I'm giving away. So that'll be before the big auction on at 9 o'clock. Last but not least, we are finally getting hard copies of Project Shadowbreed Volume 2, Number 1.
Nice.
So they've been ordered. We're waiting for them to come in. As soon as they do, they'll go. Most of them are going to go onto the site, but we have stuff that's already being distributed to some local shops that get it already. So we're excited about that. So I'll make another announcement as soon as they come in. You guys can head over to the site if you want to get your hands on 1, 2, 3, or 4 different covers. Yes, eat that, Marvel and DC nuts. So yeah, looking forward to that. Okay, cool. That's enough wasting time. Let's hop into these reviews that we have for this week. I believe you have 2 books. I have 1. So I will be the sandwich meat this time.
Okay.
You be the slice of bread that goes on top.
Very good. Ew.
Off you go.
That's awesome lunchtime imagery. All right. So the book I have is from Ablaze. It is called Traveling to Mars. It is written by Mark Russell. It is illustrated by Roberto Dakar Melli. And it is colored by Chiara Di Francia. Edited by Davide Gigi Cacci. Lettered by Mattia Gentili, and that's a logo and book design, Fabrizio Verrocchi. Why not just go
Fabrizio? Nice.
Fabrizio. I worked for Fabrizio once. Nice Italian man.
Okay.
So this is a really cool book. The cover grabbed me. It's the Mars landscape with a guitar with some broken strings sticking out of the dirt. So that pulled me in. That cover really did, because I'm like, okay, what's the story behind this? Is this a band that goes to Mars? But no, it's not. It's this guy, Roy Livingston, divorced manager at a pet food store, who is has terminal cancer, right? Mm. And it is in the future. It's like 2048. We have depleted all of our natural resources, but a rover on Mars has discovered a pocket with all this great natural gas that is just ripe for the taking for folks on Earth to exploit and utilize. So it's since no one has been to Mars, it's sort of like this mad race to get to Mars first. So everybody's trying in secret to try to get somebody to Mars first. And this man is picked because he has like really no connections, and he's going to die in about 6 months or so. And they have in their studies, they've realized that space travel can pause the corruption of the cancer cells. Mm. So he can survive the trip. All he has to do is to get to Mars, shoot a video of him on Mars, and then die. There's no plan to bring him back. And this is all so that this group that at first you think it's Roy and the reader thinks it's the United States government approaching him, right? It's actually a company that makes imitation meat. They're the ones that are determined to get this guy on Mars before anybody else. And his compensation, it's his family, because he still has a mother and I guess an ex-wife and whatnot, but his family would get $10 million and a lifetime supply of this imitation meat. However, he had to sign an NDA. He can't tell anybody where he's going and what he's doing. So what's a really cool thing, and to Mark Russell's strengths as a writer, the loneliness. Mark Russell does loneliness really well. He's doing a Superman series called Space Age right now with Mike Allred. It just really writes about the loneliness of this last son of Krypton. And here we have it in reverse. You have this guy on Earth who's going to go to another planet just to die. And they even talk about how he's going to die on Mars. And just he's this very lonely guy, and you feel his sort of regret, especially at the end of the first issue when he realizes he wanted to say goodbye to his mom. He wanted to at least have that closure. And that's sort of where you're leaving at the end of the first issue. They've already launched, and he doesn't realize this because it's the way they launch it is very interesting too, very future. So he's like, wait, no, let's not launch yet. I just got to do something. And they're like, no, we're like already, look, there's Earth. We're already miles out, and that's like crushing. It was a very crushing ending to the first issue. And the setup was great. The art is gorgeous and really does a good job of straddling that line between realistic and traditional comic art. Tells the story really well. Like everything is very clear and pulls your eye very effectively and through the story and across the page. So I really dug this book. I thought this was a really great first issue, and definitely want to see where this goes and what this guy winds up doing, you know, if and when he gets to Mars. And hopefully he can find a way out. Maybe there's, you know, there's some sort of silver lining there for him. I would hope if we're going to spend this time with him, or he's going to have a great death. We'll see. But yeah, Traveling to Mars by Ablaze. Great first issue. Really interesting concept that and a really engaging character that I want to stick with.
Cool. All right. Traveling to Mars from Ablaze. Yeah, they didn't they have the Cimmerian thing that they were
they
doing?
They were the ones that were doing the Cimmerian. Yes, yes. Yeah. And among other things. But yeah, that's well, I'm going to actually touch on Cimmerian slightly with the next book. But sweet. Yes.
Okay. All right, cool. I guess it's my turn.
Yeah.
All right. I have Ninja Funk, and this is from Whatnot Publishing. So outside of
Whatnot, I've never heard of Whatnot. Yeah.
Outside of what they were doing with, you know, their app and auctioning and selling, they decided to get into the publishing business. And I think this is their second book that they published. The first book was called Alpha Betas.
Yep.
And so, you know, I picked this up because it's a Dave Mack cover. So whenever he does a freaking cover, you want to pick it up. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, it had 1,000 covers. And what I will say about this particular book, whatever they did, they hired talent, to do their covers. I mean, you're going to have a Mack cover on your main cover. And then they had some homage covers that were pretty cool of, is that Spider-Man? It's not Spider-Man 3. It's Spider-Man 1?
Yeah, the adjectiveless Spider-Man 1. The,
yeah,
the,
with
Todd Rodin. The one they made McFarlane. For Todd. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So,
I like that cover with the TV head. I think that's
I do. Cool. It's pretty cool. So, you know, that just draws you in right away. So, basically, the person... Oh, actually, let me go over the credits, and then I go over the person that will actually appreciate this book. So, it is from Whatnot Publishing. You have... The creators are Steve Schuett and JPG, which I'm going to think it's JPEG. And then the artist is Alex Regal. Letters done by Dennis Buena and Rob Cannon. Yeah, so cool things about this book that I appreciate. So if you're past a certain age, you will appreciate the inside cover. So where the credits are, because it's a stack of audio cassettes. And it's the spine of the audio cassettes, and each one is different. So like the Ninja Funk logo is in one cassette, and then the creators is another cassette, but it's totally different text, totally different spine. Like it's a different cassette in your collection, which is pretty cool. And then
as AJ can attest to, each one is a specific existing album design and font.
I believe like, so, yes, because this is AC/DC on here.
I think there's Guns N' Roses.
Guns N' Roses. Yeah. Yeah, there's a bunch on there, which is pretty cool.
AJ was like, I have every one of these actual cassettes, and I will figure out exactly which one it is.
So now you can guess how old AJ is just by that particular sentence. What would have made this even cooler, because the top cassette, where it says Whatnot Publishing Presents, is actually flat face. So you can actually see the tape, and you can see the two the holes where the cassette deck would have went into. This would have been super cool if they would have taken advantage of this and gave everybody a Whatnot pencil. So just in case the cassette broke, you would stick it in there and you would turn it. Nice. See? And only a person past a certain age would get that shit. All right. So who is this book for? Murder Falcon. Anybody who read any one of the Opus, you know, Music Disturbed, Evanescence kind of books. So it falls along that kind of genre of music and books. Now, out of all the genres that I do not gravitate to, this is probably the one that I gravitate to the least. So like Dungeons and Dragons, sci-fi, all that stuff, I will read it 10 times more before than I would read a musical book, because music needs to be heard.
Yes.
So what they did that it was cool, though, is they have sort of like a, what do they call it? Why am I getting like brain fog? The square.
The caption, right?
The square barcode.
Oh, right. Okay.
So they have one of those, a QR code.
Where you can
actually scan it, and it takes you to the album for this particular book.
Okay, cool.
Which is pretty cool. So it has a company. I think one other book did that too, and it was meant to be read as you were reading the book.
Right. There were, yeah, there was one like that. And then I remember what, Radio
We Live. Yeah, we Radio Live, Apocalypse, yeah. And We Live. Well, Radio Apocalypse was like more of like the
They would show you like the album as right. the DJ was going to put it on the thing. And then that's when you're supposed to drop the needle yourself.
Correct. Or
they would talk about a song and then we'd start to play and that's when you play. Yeah.
So things like that are pretty cool because you're bringing two mediums together, trying to get people involved in both mediums. But for a person like me, who needs complete silence when I read, like, seriously, that's why I wake up at the crack of dawn, make my coffee, sit where there's no, like, just a page turning. That's all you hear. Then it takes me out of the element. So, but anybody who appreciates that, like, likes background music, or it feels like it enhances their reading experience, this is right up their alley and stuff like that. So it's cool. The other thing that I do like, and I've gravitated more towards it, is sort of like that watercolor-based painting. This is digital. I can tell it's digital. It's not hand-drawn. But I like that watercolor, you know, layout of the pages. It's something about watercolor and like dynamic movement in art. It's really, really nice. But basically, you have this group of misfits. You have Wolfgang, which is a cat. You have Laser Wolf, which is this guy that is, you know, dressed up in like a wolf, like metal helmet. And then JPEG, which is that radio head, the big TV set head that you saw, are trying to save the universe because it's out of balance with its frequency. So they're saving it with music. It almost reminded me of that. Remember that Teen Titans Go movie?
Never saw it.
No, stop.
It's Teen Titans Go to the Movies, right?
No. It's the one that was a TV one where it was the music and it's The Night Begins to Shine. Okay. Dude, if you've never seen it, you have to because you will never get that fucking song out of your head. They play it so much. And it's fucking cool because they have these guys, I forgot what band it was, that they had to travel. They went back and got so they could feed this dragon with music. It was insane, but it was great.
Only Teen Titans Go music reference that I know, and really the only thing I have actually seen from Teen Titans Go is Meatball Party. There's a song.
But that was within an episode. No, this was like a series of episodes where they put it together as a movie, and it was freaking fantastic. So the art in here is cool. There's some great opportunity for this book to be even better. I think the only issue that I really had with it was sort of like the pacing, because I don't know if it was meant to be a one-shot or an anthology, because at the very end, it doesn't say the end, it doesn't say to be continued, but in the end, you know, inside interior page, it has Ninja Funk number 2.
Oh.
So I think it's a continuing story because of what happened at the very end. But like so much happened in such a short amount of time where it was like, maybe I went to like a mosh pit and didn't know what the fuck happened. And I have to go back and just kind of like re-soak it through. So I did it a once over. But for me, because I probably do have that mental block with, you know, music and books and, you know, trying to fine tune, you know, the frequency of the universe. And then the bad guy for this particular issue, his name is Bad Music. It's B.A.D. And like none of the acronyms had an explanation for the acronyms. I don't know what bad means. And there's acronyms all over the place and I don't know what they mean because they're not explained. So it's little things like that. But you know, as an artist, I appreciated what they were doing with like the, because the coloring is really, really good here in this particular book. And then sort of like the layouts were really cool as well. For me, I think I just had a trouble with connecting to the story and sort of like the pacing and the relevance of certain characters because they were just there to say a line and nothing else. So you've seen comedy shows and you've seen shows or you've seen movies where somebody's just there just to be there and they don't necessarily add any value to the story. However, what I will say is these guys have gotten together really great talent for the covers. So if we look at issue number 2, you have Boss Logic, you have Kirkham, you have Mac, you have Nakayama, are all doing covers for issue number 2. So the covers are going to be freaking awesome, just like they were on 1. So, but yeah, like I said, if you like those Opus books, Radio Apocalypse, We Live that had the soundtrack, anything that has to do with like music, and you know, that being part of the story, then this will be right up your alley. Check it out, Ninja Funk. You might like it.
Very Pretty cool.
Yep. Nice. Second book from Whatnot Publishing. We'll see what they got coming along the lines.
All right.
You got our last one.
Yeah. So back to Dynamite Comics, which we did, I think last week we had a Dynamite book. This is the Tarzan book that can't call itself a Tarzan book. This is Lord of the Jungle, number one. Written by Dan Jurgens, illustrated by Benito Gallego, colored by Francesco Segala, lettered by Carlos M. Mangual, and edited by Matt Idelson. And so, yeah, you had mentioned Ablaze before, and Ablaze has a series called Cimmerian, and it is a Conan book, but it is adapting the original Robert E. Howard Conan stories that are in the public domain. So you sort of have a similar situation here with Dynamite, and they've been doing these Tarzan comics for almost a decade now, if not longer. Tarzan as a license proper has bounced around from almost every company. Gold Key, DC, Marvel, Dark Horse, and they were all allowed to use the actual Tarzan logo on the cover, fully licensed. And it's weird. This copyright stuff is very strange. It's very weird, and there's a lot of weird ins and outs. Like, I know... Action Comics number one, right, is coming up, might be public domain or will be public domain in a matter of years. And what does that mean? Does that mean that anybody can go out and do a Superman book with Superman on the title and, you know, use all of Superman and Lex Luthor and Brainiac and Doomsday? Well, no, actually they can't. What is public domain or what would become public domain is specifically the contents of Action number one, because that was an independent thing that was bought by National Periodicals from Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. So all somebody could do, they couldn't even use the Superman in the title because that is a trademark, that is a license owned by DC and Warner Brothers. But they could do a story that picks up from the events following Action One. So they could do Superman, Clark Kent, Lois Lane, the Daily Star, not the Daily Planet, you know, George Taylor as the editor, not Perry White, you know. So all those, you know, so anything post number one, because I think once after number one, everything Siegel and Shuster did for National, which became DC, it was work for hire. And so they own those the story content. But that I just, so it's a very similar thing, I think, with Tarzan, where there is a license holder, there's somebody who owns the name and the branding of Tarzan, but one could, I think at this point, because the first Tarzan novel came out in 1912, a traveling salesman drifter, Edgar Rice Burroughs, essentially rips off Jungle Book, replaces the tigers with apes, and comes up with this new guy called Tarzan, and it's a huge hit. And for many decades, Tarzan was among the seven most recognizable fictional characters, right, across the world, like Mickey Mouse, Santa Claus, Sherlock Holmes, Tarzan. I even think Superman was up there too. I mean, that list is definitely changed in years since then, since I was a kid when I saw that list. But so what I think essentially you can do with Tarzan and what they're doing in this book is you can regurgitate the content from the actual novels written by Edgar Rice Burroughs. You could call him Tarzan in the book, but because somebody else has the rights for the logo, they have to call it Lord of the Jungle. And you can actually introduce some new ideas, and which is very hard to do for Tarzan. So, you know, Tarzan has that stigma of always being me, Tarzan, you, Jane, dumb jungle guy, right? Never, you know, but in the books, he actually, right in that first book, gets reintroduced into civilization and, you know, becomes educated and then bounces between the civilized world and the savage world. And that's where a lot of his adventures take place. And a lot of his adventures take place in like World War One. But Tarzan, especially in a lot of comics, I think, another company, Malibu Comics, right? Back in the 90s, they did a whole bunch of Tarzan books set in the modern day, but Tarzan was still youthful and young and was immortal. And so, you know, how do you do something new with a character that's 110 years old now, you know? And so what Dan Jurgens, of course, everybody, you know, who knows comics knows Dan Jurgens is the man who killed Superman. He 30 years ago this month, actually, you know, he decides to retell in this first issue, the origin of Tarzan, how Tarzan was, you know, his parents were stranded on the island and he was born there and they die and he's raised by the apes. That's all covered in a very truncated way in this comic, but it's also in the 1950s where you actually have an old Tarzan, you know, he's actually very grizzled and aged. He's not immortal. He's still formidable, but he is an old Tarzan going back. So he's reflecting on his past. And so that's going to, I think, be the course of the series, because this ends just up until Tarzan has his first encounter with people who are coming to the island, not just humans that have already existed on the island that he had met when he was a kid. Now he's, as an adult, he sees like these, this landing party come in and they're hunters and poachers and whatnot, you know? So he's reflecting on his past as he's returning as an old man to, I get, you know, to wrap up some unfinished business. So that's a really cool take. And I think again, for Tarzan, it is, it's pretty new ish as far as treating him like he's not this immortal Superman, that he is, he does grow old and could die, right? So I really like that take on it. What really grabbed me about this book though was the art, because every Tarzan comic has also pretty much done Tarzan's origin, and John Buscema had worked on a Tarzan book, and Joe Kubert had also worked on a Tarzan book. I think Buscema was Marvel and Kubert was DC. And they have some of the, you know, in comics and not comic strips, they have some of the more definitive portrayals of Tarzan. And what the artist does here, Benito Gallego, he really kind of merges their styles. So you kind of get a mix of the John Buscema, Joe Kubert, which is such a, and it's such a great retro throwback. It really feels like you're reading a Tarzan comic from the 70s, right? And I really dug that. The colors are a little too modern to fully immerse you in that experience, but the colors are good and effective for the scenes that they are depicting. You know, there's a major fight with an ape that is just overtoned in red, you know, which it really does capture that bloodlust frenzy of that battle, especially as written by Burroughs in the original book. So the color choices are really nice and they work for the story, but it's interesting to see this sort of older art style, emulating this older art style with a bit of that modern color touches. But that being said, I mean, for me, I've been a Tarzan nerd ever since I, you know, even before I saw Greystoke in 1984 with our favorite from Highlander, Christopher Lambert. A movie where I've told you this before. Greystoke is great. A movie where his non-grasp of the English language at the time and learning all his lines phonetically actually translates really well, because as a character, Tarzan learns English from a picture book as a kid, is taught to speak French, and then it has to learn from French to English as an adult, right? So so his, you know, his phonetic pronunciation of the dialogue in Greystoke works really well for that character, more so than the whatever Scottish accent thing he's trying to do in Highlander just 2 years later.
That shouldn't even be a sentence.
So I really dug this, and I think this is like, you know, again, I think Tarzan as a figure in literature has sort of been forgotten and let go. I think in some cases, like Conan, he falls under that stigma of, you know, what some would consider toxic masculinity, even though both of these guys always do manage to fight for the underdog as well as take care of themselves. But anyway, I feel that Tarzan as a work of literature has sort of been lost in the shuffle recently. So hopefully like some kid will pick this up and be like, oh, this is a cool comic. Oh, and there's a book about it. Oh, there's 24 books about it. All right, let me dive into some of this stuff. Because some of the books, as much as like Edgar Rice Burroughs had no understanding of what Africa was like and what animals existed in Africa, and there's a lot of made up stuff in there, the books are really well written. And I always, you know, I've looked at those as some of like me feeling as a kid being like, oh, I'm reading a real book. I'm reading Tarzan, you know. Yeah. But But yeah, so really fun first issue that really sets up everything you need to know about Tarzan, whether you know it or didn't or forgot. And then the idea that we're going to see him now, you know, as an old, as a grizzled old man, you know, like a Harrison Ford in Indiana Jones 5 kind of adventure. That's a vibe I totally got. That or like an old man Logan with long hair, you know.
Yes.
But I really like that aspect that Dan Jurgens is bringing to it. And I wonder if this will end up being the quote unquote last Tarzan story ever told. I wonder if Dan Jurgens, who is, I guess, working that way through the list of seven most famous icons, one by one, every 30 years, killing them off, Tarzan would be next after he took care of Superman. So maybe that's where this is going. Maybe this is going to be the death of Tarzan, you know.
We'll see.
We'll see. I liked it. A ton of covers from Dynamite. Surprisingly, no cosplay cover on this Dynamite. I mean,
well, because it's not a girl.
Every other character with a loincloth gets a cosplay cover, but not this one. But yes, there is a pattern there if you do look at it.
They couldn't find a short enough penis. But here's the deal. So, but good on Dynamite too for now expanding their library a little bit, because you know, with Cherish last week, I believe it was last week, right? And then now Lord of the Jungle. I mean, there's a little bit of Cherish is probably still along, like the Vampirella, Red Sonja, but Lord of the Jungle. I mean, even Panther, all that stuff is pretty much the same. But hopefully they keep expanding their library.
Yeah. I mean, again, they're king of the licenses, I think, right now.
Right.
As far as...
But this wouldn't be a license, would it?
It, you know, but it's interesting. It's like it's one of those, it is, but it isn't. I don't know. I don't know where this falls in that gray area of the copyright.
Yeah.
But I would consider it a license because it's a derivative work. They're using a pre-existing character. They're not creating a new character. They're using a pre-existing character. So I would say as far as output, I mean, it's licensed. They didn't create Vampirella. You know, they didn't create Red Sonja. They acquired these characters.
Right.
So I think in this...
Maybe this is a workaround.
Yeah, I mean, again, the legality of it really does escape me. But in my mind, that's a licensed character. That just falls right in there, you know? Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's for them to debate. all right, cool. So you recommend?
I would recommend it. Again, it's an old school type comic that will, you know, that will kind of bring you back to when you were a kid, if that's the kind of type of stuff you read when you were a kid, like I did.
Right. Cool. All right. Well, check it out, guys. You got your three books there. You got Ninja Funk, Lord of the Jungle, and Traveling from Mars this week. If you like what you're hearing, make sure you click subscribe to the podcast. If you want to be on the podcast, you're a creator, you want to promote yourself and or something you have coming out, go to AmazingActionComics.com/podcast. Fill out the form. Phil and I would love to have you on and give a chat for a while. Stay up to date on everything that's Amazing Action Comics at AmazingActionComics.com. Be sure to support your local shop because you want it to be around forever. Phil, where do you get your comics from?
I get my comics at The Joker's Child in Fairlawn, New Jersey. And yeah, we got a lot of this great stuff. These books that we always review every week, we have them at The Joker's Child and so much more. The holidays are coming, so get your Christmas shopping done early. And if you can't decide what you want, we do gift certificates as well. So let them pick out what they want for Christmas. You just give them the money.
There you go. Holy shit, that was the shortest one ever.
It was the shortest
Unbelievable. That was awesome. No, that was adequate. No, that was amazing. All right, kiddies, until next time, that is all that we have for you. So please be amazing, stay amazing, and read something amazing.